Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredient as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Hey everyone, it's Kona here. I am by myself today. Unfortunately, we do not have a regular episode, but I would never leave you guys hanging. That's not true, I have before, but I am not leaving you guys hanging this week. What I have is an unsolved missing persons case, but it is brought to you by my friend Autumn, host of Autumn's Oddities. Autumn's Oddities is another true crime podcast, but she also covers like mystical things and cryptids and like all kinds of stuff, like just very cool stuff. I'm a big fan of hers, and so I'm really happy to be doing this fee drop. Now, this episode is about the 2015 disappearance of Crystal Rogers. She was a mother of five who vanished very mysteriously in Kentucky. Kentucky is actually where Autumn lives, so this was kind of a semi-local case for her, which she talks about in the episode. Now, this was actually Autumn's very first episode, and the sound quality is actually a lot better than our first episode, so I hope you will enjoy it. But because it is, you know, a little bit older, I believe there have been some updates in this case. So we may be doing a follow-up episode if there is enough to say about that. But again, thank you so much for sticking around. You will enjoy this episode on the disappearance of Crystal Rogers. We will be here next week with our brand new episode. As promised, I am working on it. We will be ready. Again, if you want to join us on Patreon, you can do so. We did release a Patreon-only bonus episode there this week. So that is an option too, if you would like a little bit of our contents before we come out with our next episode. But for now, please enjoy Autumn's Oddities and the disappearance of Crystal Rogers.
Hey there, I'm Autumn, and welcome to Autumn's Oddities. This is the first of hopefully many episodes, mainly true crime, gonna dabble in some haunting, the occult, cults, cryptids, just some weird stuff in general. So if you yourself are strange and unusual, that's probably why you're here and likely why you're listening. I just want to thank you for being here and starting this journey with me. I'm kind of starting over career-wise to pursue one of my biggest interests, which is true crime. I pretty much listen to, read, watch exclusively just true crime and weird stuff, some horror movies, some classic shows, you know, Buffy, the like. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a broadcaster. I'm not a professional in any way. I'm pretty much a lifelong student, dabbled in law, biology, you know, this and that. You'll likely hear a little Southern twang in my voice. That's the Kentucky coming out. It might get heavier the more passionate I get. Just get ready for it. And I think for me, the fascination with true crime and everything else weird has a lot to do with I have personal experience with it. And I'm sure I'll go into that as it relates to stories and cases that we talk about. And I also just think that as a woman, a great deal of violent crime is perpetrated against us. And I just want to know what's out there. I want to stay vigilant and listen to these stories, including survival stories. They won't all just be murders and disappearances, just so maybe I could protect myself one day. Maybe you could protect yourself. Enough about my paranoia. Let's get into today's case. The disappearance of Crystal Rogers and the bizarre, and I mean bizarre, string of crimes in Bardstown, Kentucky. This case has spanned several years and has just a ridiculous amount of twists and turns. There are several main theories in the community regarding what happened to Crystal, as well as four other unsolved murders in the town. I don't want to speculate too wildly when it comes to suspects because I'm not trying to get caught up in a defamation suit. This happened very close by, and I don't want anybody's family coming for me. I heard about this case a lot in 2015. I was living in Louisville, about 40 miles away from the hometown that she disappeared from. It was pretty shocking to me that a mother of five that was very close to her family could just up and disappear. I watched the Oxygen series, The Disappearance of Crystal Rogers, a lot in my research, and they really did uncover some, I'm going to go ahead and say, next level fuckery going on in this town. Also, there will be cussing in this podcast. I know some people try not to cuss. I am a Marine and a fireman's daughter. I am married to a former member of the Navy. I will be cussing. So there's that. First of all, let's just talk about who Crystal Rogers is. Crystal Rogers was a 35-year-old mom of five. She was from the close-knit community of Bardstown, Kentucky, which is about 40 miles south of Louisville. Bardstown has been named the most beautiful small town in America and is a picturesque little town that one would assume really doesn't have much crime. Personality-wise, her mother and brother described her as an easygoing mom to her children. She was shy, but made friends easily, and she loved kids. She was very hardworking and provided for her kids the best she could. Crystal was very close to her mother and the rest of her family, by all accounts. At the time of her disappearance, she was living with her boyfriend and the father of her baby, her youngest baby, Brooks Houck. At that point, I believe they'd been together for nearly 3 years. According to the FBI page on Crystal, on July 5th, 2015, she was reported missing by her mother after she had been seen, after she'd not been seen or heard from since the evening of July 3rd, 2015. The same day Crystal was reported missing, her car was found abandoned with a flat tire on the Bluegrass Parkway in Bardstown, Kentucky. Her keys, phone, and purse were still inside her maroon Chevy Impala. She was also known to never go anywhere without her children, especially her baby, Eli. So what happened to Crystal? Where'd she go? I mean, her car, everything's left on the side of the road. The last time that she was seen, confirmed seen, was on July 3rd. She was actually seen by her cousin walking out of Walmart the day before all the 4th of July celebrations in 2015. Crystal's ex-husband said she dropped off two of their kids at his house. And relatives said that Crystal had a date night with her boyfriend, Brooks Houck, and that he told the police they'd gone to his mom's farm on the night of the 3rd. When he woke up on July 4th, Crystal's gone, and the baby is lying next to him. According to Houck, he attempted to call her, but she didn't answer. He said they hadn't fought. I know this sounds weird. I'm going to get into it a little bit more. I'm just trying to break down a timeline of her disappearance at this point. On Sunday, the 5th of July, Crystal's daughter, Kylie, began asking Sherry, Crystal's mom, if she'd heard from Crystal. It was very uncharacteristic of Crystal not to stay in contact with her family, especially her kids. And this is one thing that people kept repeating is that she was always with her children, always in contact, would never leave her kids. So this is very weird. Sherry, her mother, immediately starts calling people that Crystal knew and no one had heard from her. Finally, Crystal's daughter, Kylie, began asking Sherry if she'd heard from Crystal, and Sherry drives to Crystal's house just to see what's going on. She gets there and she sees Brooks, the boyfriend, in his car in the driveway. And Sherry asks him where Crystal is, and he says, I don't know. Sherry said he doesn't seem all that concerned that the mother of his newborn baby is gone. And then she sees the baby in the back seat. And this is strange because Brooks typically doesn't care for the child on his own. Crystal's always there or Crystal has the baby on her own. So Sherry knows right away there's something wrong. And she files a missing persons report on Sunday, July 5th, 2015. So that same day, her father and her brother start their own search. And they find Crystal's car on the side of the road
with her keys, her purse, her uncharged cell phone, and a diaper bag on the side of the Bluegrass Parkway. It did have a flat tire, but to her dad and her brother, Tommy and Casey, it seemed like something was wrong with the scene. Her dad said that Crystal would not have pulled over on the side of the road unless she had an absolute blowout, like shredded her tire completely, could not drive. She was very, very cautious. He even said that once Crystal had driven her car down to the rim when she had a flat tire, just so she could exit at a safe place. Again, there were some issues with the scene and her car. This is where the weirdness kind of comes in. Her family does not believe she drove the car there in the first place, especially her brother, Casey. Casey says that the seat was in a position that she did not drive in. Crystal liked to ride with the seat way, way back and put her leg left leg up while driving. Plus, she left all of her things in the car, which, I mean, who's leaving their phone and their purse on the side of the road and just walking off? I don't think I would ever do that. Like, I would at least carry the stuff with me. Even if the phone was dead, you don't leave your phone. Also, you don't leave your keys, your purse, the diaper bag, maybe. So the family believed that the police were not too concerned with the missing adult, which a lot of the time they aren't. They think, oh, she's out partying. Again, you know your family, though. You know if they would or would not just go out, abandon their kids, and party. So Tommy, Crystal's dad, began collecting evidence and investigating immediately. He collected every surveillance tape from gas stations nearby and searched as much land as he could for Crystal. And Sherry believes that Tommy's tireless and dogged search efforts were what got him killed. Yes, you did hear that, right? Crystal's dad, Tommy Ballard, was murdered while investigating his daughter's disappearance. Not only was he killed, it truly seems like he was assassinated and on his own farm. So on the morning of November 19th, 2016, Crystal's son went hunting with Tommy on their family farm near the Bluegrass Parkway, again, where Crystal's car was found abandoned. As the two walked toward the fence line, Tommy was shot and killed. Right away, Sherry knows this isn't an accident. It was common knowledge that they went hunting the first week of rifle season on that property. There were also very strange alterations made on the property on the day of the shooting. Tree branches have been freshly sawed off at the fence line, creating kind of what looked like a surveillance fort. And it was bordering the fence line on the Bluegrass Parkway. In the Oxygen documentary, police and ballistics experts said that this was done in order to create a spot to shoot. And their theory is that someone pulled off the parkway, cleared the brush, and shot Tommy. The ballistics expert said that the clearing was a surveillance fort and that the branches were cut so that the shooter could lie in wait for Tommy. And Tommy apparently saw something that morning at the tree line. When he and his grandson got out, they began to walk toward that tree line. Tommy put out his hand like to stop the boy and looked through his gun scope, I guess, to try to see further away, and was immediately shot as soon as he raised his gun. The expert believes that more than one person was involved to facilitate a faster getaway. Near the fence line, there was a kickback mark from the gun in the bark of a tree. And in a forensic recreation done by that expert, it was found that the kickback mark was in the exact spot the fatal shot was taken from. So someone made a surveillance fort, lied in wait for Tommy, who was leading the investigation for his disappeared daughter, and killed him while he was hunting on his own property. From the fence line up the Bluegrass Parkway. Weird, huh? So the expert says that this was an assassination and that it was very similar to that of Jason Ellis, who we'll get into later. They both created a kind of trap from a vantage point at which they could see the victim coming, shot them, and made a fast getaway. His family believes that Tommy was killed by the people responsible for Crystal's disappearance and that it was an attempt to scare him and them. So let's talk about what Tommy's family believes got him killed, and they called it Tommy's box. Tommy collected a massive amount of evidence and kept it at his house in his box. In the Oxygen documentary, Sherry shows Dwayne and Stephanie, but he had only shown it to a handful of trusted people before.
He had videotapes, communication logs, documents, locations, all categorized and in an inventory. He created timelines and maps of sightings. His box looked like a file from a seasoned detective. It's a lot of stuff. Tommy also had surveillance footage from Walmart on July 3rd at 4:36 p.m., which is the last confirmed sighting of Crystal alive. Her neighbor believes that she saw her bringing in bags to the house around 5, but again, that can't be confirmed. It's just hearsay. It is confirmed, however, that the last person to see her alive was her boyfriend, Brooks Houck, and that's by his own admission. So, who is Brooks Houck? Crystal rented a house from Brooks Houck, and the two began dating pretty soon afterward. He came from a wealthy family of property owners, developers, and landlords. He even ran for Nelson County Sheriff while he and Crystal were together. Spoiler, he did not win. But Crystal's family liked Brooks, and she had a son with him. And by all accounts, he was a good father, but only to that child, the one that he had with Crystal. The rest of Crystal's kids, as far as he was concerned, could fend for themselves, and he wouldn't even do something as small as buy them food. To me, he just kind of seems like a small town rich guy, big fish in a small pond. Huge ego. That's just my take, though. Crystal's friends said that Brooks isolated her from them after they began dating. They believe she was trapped, that she worked for him and that he was kind of in charge of her financially and she didn't have a way out. Her friends also said that she would never leave her family willingly. That's the one thing, again, that everyone had to say about her. She would never leave the kids. And for that reason, Sherry immediately wanted Brooks questioned because her daughter would never leave those kids unless she was completely incapacitated. Brooks said that Crystal was playing games on her phone the night before she disappeared, and when he woke up in the morning, she was gone. He said they weren't fighting, but he thought maybe she went to her cousin Sabrina's house. There was confusion as to why she would leave if they weren't fighting. And when Sabrina was questioned regarding these frequent overnight stays, as Brooks put it, she says Crystal only came over twice in the 3 years that she and Brooks were together and stayed for a couple of hours at a time. She never stayed overnight. So there's some conflicting statements there. Brooks said that she frequently just dipped out of the house whenever they got into an argument, came back when she cooled off. The cousin says, no, that didn't happen. She came over couple times, never stayed overnight. So I'm going to break down the timeline from here on out. Crystal has disappeared. It seems like the evening of July 3rd. July 5th, her mother has reported her missing. And on July 8th, finally, Brooks Houck is interviewed by detectives with the Nelson County Sheriff's Office. Obviously, because he was the last person to see her alive. They would want to speak to him, see if he's got any information. So Tommy had a DVD of that interview in his box. And in the interview, detectives take a statement from Brooks. The detective goes ahead and lays out a timeline of Crystal's last hours, just what he can gather from what Brooks and surveillance video have told him. And he asks Brooks to confirm that timeline. The detective asks if they were at the family farm Friday night before she disappeared. He then asks Brooks about a fire on the property. I guess a bonfire, not like a raging forest fire. And Brooks seems to get agitated at that point. I guess he doesn't want to be questioned about his disappeared girlfriend and mother of his baby. On July 3rd, it was raining and the weather was cool, but supposedly they all took a walk around the farm. It seems here that the detective is asking, you know, why would you be walking around a farm with a baby in shitty weather? I mean, that's a good question. I don't usually drag my baby out on walks when it's disgusting outside, but live your life, I guess. The detective asks him to continue the events of that weekend. And Brooks claims that he woke up on Saturday. Again, baby's next to him and Crystal is gone. He does not know when he started to call and text to see where she was at. Again, very strange. The mother of your child's gone, but you don't really seem to be looking for her. Like, you really can't even be bothered with a phone call or text. Brooks says that their relationship wasn't the most stable. He's repeating the same thing he said to Sherry. It's not the most stable relationship. If they fought, she'd take off to her cousin's house and then come back when she cooled off. Again, this seems very inconsistent because he told Crystal's mother and the detective that they hadn't fought that night.
This is a contradiction. Everything you're saying so far is very contradictory. So she only disappears when they fight, but the two hadn't fought, but she's gone. And somehow you've come to the conclusion that she took off to her cousin's house to stay because she's mad, I guess for no reason, because you didn't fight. So continuing, he wakes up on Saturday morning. Crystal's not there. Brooks takes the baby to the farm. The detective asks, how many times did you call Crystal at this point? And Brooks says, I didn't want to blow up her phone. Okay. Again, it feels like beating a dead horse here, but, you know. When asked what he did the following day, this is day two of Crystal being gone, he flat out says he cannot recall what he did that day. He just doesn't seem terribly concerned about her being gone. Really, he seems more concerned with the fact that he has to take care of a baby alone now. That's my takeaway. The interview progresses, and Brooks gets increasingly more agitated. He calls the interview silly and says that he's trying to move on. And at this point, it's been 5 days since Crystal's missing, but he's trying to move on. Okay. Been long enough, right? The detective says it's very strange that Crystal just left her car and belongings, and that the bloodhounds found no scent of Crystal leaving the car or anywhere around the Bluegrass Parkway. Brooks doesn't have any theories as to why that's the case. So bloodhounds didn't pick up her scent going away from the car. Like, they got the scent in the car. They did not get the scent leaving the car. So if she parked her car there, got out and walked away, or even got out and got in another car, I think they would have picked that up. So as the detective is questioning Brooks, his phone rings. He picks up a phone call in the middle of a police interview. That is some privilege right there. I can't imagine having the balls. So the call is from his brother, Nick Houck, an officer with the Bardstown Police Department. He was concerned that the investigators might be trying to trip Brooks up. Okay, trip him up. But how did he know he was there, first of all? Anyway, the call, at least the part that we can hear in the video, because again, there's video of this interview. It's a very strange interaction. Brooks answers the phone by saying, I know you didn't know I was here. Yeah, because that's how I casually answer my phone during a police interview. That's a common greeting. His brother tells him that he should get up and leave and that they're trying to frame him. Nick thinks the police are going to, quote, fuck him. And the interview was over after that phone call. I'm just saying, holy shit, impeding a police investigation as a police officer much? Well, Nick Houck fucked up, and he put himself on the radar of the Nelson County PD. On July 9th, 2015, that same day, the police call Nick and request to speak with him, the same day as Brooks's interview. He declines to speak with them. So he's a police officer declining to speak to a neighboring police department and impeding a police investigation. That didn't work out for him. He was then ordered by a superior to cooperate. And his superior told him, quote, to unass that chair, which is classic, and go for an interview. So also on July 9th, that same day, Brooks is accused by Crystal's family of not taking her disappearance seriously enough. And Brooks, in response, agrees to an interview with Nancy Grace. I don't know why you would do that. She's kind of a bulldog. And I feel like if you did have something to hide, that would be a pretty good place to trip up. He admitted to Nancy Grace that he and Crystal did not have the best relationship, that it was stressed, but he denies having anything to do with her disappearance. So now we are on July 15th, 2015, Nick unasses that chair and is finally interviewed by Kentucky State Police. And they go at him pretty hard, pretty quickly. And they start questioning him about being on the farm on July 8th, which was the day of Brooks's interview and Nick's phone call. So within 2 hours of Brooks's interview, both brothers drove out to their family farm. Kentucky State Police wants to know why both of them immediately run out to their family farm after a police interview.
Nick claims that he can't remember. This family, I guess, has selective amnesia. They just can't remember things that happened like a couple of days ago. Can't remember the event 1 week prior. And the detectives, they are just not buying it at all. Apparently, Nick could remember making the phone call to his brother during the police interview, but he claimed that he could not remember meeting with his brother or doing anything after that. So, again, selective amnesia, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. His police cruiser is taken to forensics. It's tested, and the detectives say that the trunk, quote, lit up like Chernobyl. So Nick denies that there is any bodily fluids in his trunk, in spite of the fact that it lit up like Chernobyl. The detectives propose a theory to Nick that Brooks killed Crystal, called Nick for help, and they disposed of her together. This is their theory. From what I gather, it's not conclusive whether or not they actually had that evidence against Nick, or if it was a tactic to try to get him to confess. The theory that they came up with seems like a pretty likely theory, but they just don't seem to have the evidence to make any arrests. July 24th, 2015, Nick takes a polygraph test, which is administered by the FBI. He fails it, according to the Huffington Post. Nick was told by the administrator that he failed, in particular, that he was deceptive regarding questions of where Crystal was and what happened to her. According to the polygraph, he knew where Crystal was and exactly what happened to her. When he's confronted with this information, Nick starts cussing and yelling at the interrogator, saying he doesn't give a fuck what his little computer says. To me, he just seems like one of those guys that would gaslight the holy shit out of you. He's confronted with a lie. Here's the proof that he's lying. But he says, everyone's crazy. I don't give a shit about your proof. And I'm right. He acts like a martyr and a victim to the point that the administrator is just like, why are you yelling? Why are you escalating this? Calm the fuck down. This is one of those things I have personal experience with, in case you couldn't tell. Gaslighting. On July 10th, 2015, police searched the Houck family farm, which was the last place that Crystal was seen alive by anyone other than just Brooks. Items of interest were taken, but ultimately nothing comes out of it. On July 12th, 2015, a search is conducted by divers on Melody Lake by the Ballards and a private dive team. Cadaver dogs alerted to the same spot on this lake numerous times, but only small sections were searched by police divers. And that area was not included in the search, the one that the dog alerted on. Coincidentally, this lake is very near to the Houck family farm, and Crystal's parents believe that she was killed on the farm and her body dumped in the lake. So now we're up to October 16th, 2015. Following a month-long suspension, Nick Houck is fired from the Bardstown Police Department after being accused of interfering with the investigation into Crystal Rogers' disappearance. On the same day, the Nelson County Sheriff, Ed Mattingly, tells WLEX 18 from Lexington, Kentucky, I would label Brooks Houck a suspect, yes, and that he believes that Crystal is dead. Her family at this point thought an arrest would be made, and they're pretty upset. I understand I'd be upset too, because from the outside, the evidence seems to be pointing all one way. As far as the investigators have indicated, however, there does not seem to be any evidence other than circumstantial, and her body has never been found. I mean, if they had a body, maybe they could do more, but still to this day, no body of Crystal. On December 16th, 2015, even more weirdness. Danny Singleton is arrested. This is a new player in the game. And charged with 38 counts of false swearing for lying under oath in the investigation of Rogers' disappearance. WLKY describes Singleton as Brooks Houck's employee and right-hand man. He later pled guilty and will be released from jail after being in custody for 6 months. So what did he lie about as it pertains to Crystal? If he lied under oath about her disappearance, what did he lie about, and what did it have to do with Brooks Houck? Because, I mean, he's his right-hand man. He's obviously lying under oath for him. So if you lied about an investigation to the point that you're imprisoned, it would stand to reason that you know something.
Again, this doesn't make sense because it indicates guilt, but no charges were made regarding Crystal's actual disappearance, just lying under oath. Then, on June 1st, 2016, the Howe brothers' 82-year-old grandmother, Anna Whitesides, invokes the Fifth Amendment after being subpoenaed to testify. According to WDRB, police wanted to ask her about a car she owned, which they theorized could have been used to dispose of Crystal Rogers' body. A witness later came forward to say that he saw Crystal's car around 10:30 p.m. on Friday, the night before she went missing. They also saw a white car pulled off the road about a mile from Crystal's. This white car matched the description of Anna's white Buick, and it also matched a similar vehicle that was seen in the video surveillance that Tommy had collected from around the area in that day. Crystal's car was still there the next morning, but the white car was not. And this same white Buick was seen by someone that was hunting at Brooks Family Farm on that same day. Anna Whitesides actually sold her Buick after a Facebook post made by Tommy and a similar vehicle was involved in Crystal's disappearance. I find that strange. If it wasn't your car and there was absolutely no evidence, I wouldn't really see a need to do anything about it. So she sells it. The dealership that bought the vehicle ends up turning it over to the police for testing. Again, did they find something? Did they find nothing? No one knows. I realize it's an active and open investigation, but they just have remained very, very close-lipped. August 30th, 2016, police search a farm belonging to Rosemary Houck, the mother of Brooks and Nick Houck. This was the same farm that Crystal was last seen on. This follows searches of the homes of Nick Houck and Anna Whitesides earlier in the month. And according to WLKY, police removed several pieces of farm equipment. Same story. It doesn't look like there was any viable evidence. And if they did find any, no charges were brought. And again, November 19th, this is where we're at in the timeline, 2016. Tommy Ballard, Crystal's father, is fatally shot in the chest by an unknown person. And this is while he was hunting with Crystal's son. Also still not solved. July 25th, 2017, the Courier Journal reports that Kentucky State Police again searched the home of the Brooks's grandmother, Anna Whitesides, looking for bullets and a reloader. Who knows if they found any of those items? Not me. I assume if they had, that an arrest would be made. And now we're at July 28th, 2017. And this is tacky. Police arrest Brooks Houck's current girlfriend, Crystal Maupin, after she's caught on camera ripping up signs that say Standing with the Ballards, which are posted around Bardstown. She is charged with theft by unlawful taking and released the same day. And really, that is some just tacky, classless shit. I'm not sure how signs supporting a family whose daughter's missing and father had been murdered are offensive to you personally, but okay. She looks like an off-brand version of Crystal, by the way. And now we are at the one-year anniversary of Tommy's death, November 19th, 2017. Signs show up around Bardstown, and they are very heavily insinuating that Brooks is responsible for Crystal's disappearance. And according to WDRB, Crystal's family denies knowing who's responsible. These signs don't really speculate so much as straight up accuse him of being responsible. They actually use quotes that he said in the Nancy Grace interviews to call him a murderer. So now is a good time to talk about some of the other signs that can be seen around Bardstown. So if you're just driving through Bardstown, this beautiful little town in Kentucky, there are black and white signs that say, solve these murders. Since 2013, there have been 4 unsolved crimes. That's 4 unsolved crimes and a disappearance in a very small town in 4 years. Kentucky State Police do not believe that these unsolved murders and disappearance are linked. They'll not go into any evidence they have. Obviously, they're open investigations, and they say they have no leads, but that they work on the case on a daily basis. They're not in charge of Crystal's case. That is the Nelson County Sheriff's Office. They are just Kentucky State Police is involved in the other cases.
So what's going on in Bardstown, Kentucky? We're going to go back to somebody we talked about earlier, Jason Ellis. Jason Ellis was a Bardstown Police Department officer, and he worked the same shift as Nick Houck. Jason was the first Bardstown Police Department officer to be killed in the line of duty. Jason was a canine officer, and he had a very, very active narcotics dog, and that dog led to a lot of arrests. He was described by his coworkers as the perfect small town cop. On May 25th, 2013, at 2 a.m., Jason Ellis calls off duty. He was driving home and exited at the Bloomfield ramp, which is the route he always took to go home after his shift. Once he got onto the ramp, he notices that there are tree limbs and debris in the roadway, and he gets out to clear them. Well, those branches actually turned out to be a trap, and he was shot and killed by someone waiting on a cliff directly above him. And to the responding officers, this was an ambush. He was not in his canine SUV that evening. He was actually in a police pool car, and his dog, Vigo, was at home. His service weapon remained in his holster, and he was shot. This is very strange. He was shot in the gap on his side where the body armor does not cover. As a civilian, I did not know where police body armor covers and where it doesn't. So to me, that sounds like somebody has inside knowledge. And someone somehow knew where and when Ellis would be on that ramp, and they put branches in precisely the right place that the police cruiser would not provide him any cover. So he got out and was just completely exposed, didn't even have time to unholster his weapon, and was found dead with the branches still in his hands. His family believes that someone specifically targeted him, but they are baffled as to who. He had no enemies and was described by everyone that knew him as a great guy. No charges were ever brought in this case. And the Nelson County Sheriff said that at the time of Jason Ellis's murder, he didn't believe a fellow officer could have had anything to do with it. And now he believes that Nick or another officer may indeed have had something to do with Ellis's murder and Crystal's disappearance. And he said it seemed that way to him just because of Nick's refusal to cooperate with the investigation. Also, people around town aren't very forthcoming with information. When asked, many residents of the town said that they have been threatened that if they talk to police or to press, that they'll be killed. So another of the unsolved crimes in Bardstown happened a little over a year later, on July 23rd, 2014. Kathy Netherland and her daughter, Samantha, were brutally murdered in their home. Kathy had her throat cut and was shot, and Samantha was also shot, and they'd both been tied to chairs. The surviving daughter of the family believes that they were targeted by a gang. She said that her sister and her mother were very outspoken against a gang in town, and she also believes that it was someone that had never been to their house because they didn't use the correct door to enter, that the family didn't use their front door. It was apparently warped, and they just preferred the side door, and whoever killed them used the front door. Multiple weapons were used, and both women were overpowered and tied up. So according to a psychological profiler, this would indicate multiple offenders. The same profiler also indicates that all four of the unsolved crimes in Bardstown could be connected because they share a type of hunting or predatory characteristic. Again, Kentucky State Police do not believe that any of these crimes are connected and refuse to give any information regarding evidence they may or may not have found in this case. So, what are the theories? This is all kind of strange. Are these connected? Are they not? Why are they still unsolved? What's really going on in this town? To me, I could see a connection between Tommy and Jason's murders. Someone lied in wait for them. They created a trap and then shot at them from a rifle from a vantage point that they created. The Netherland family murder, to me, it appears very different. Yes, it was a very predatory act. It did appear premeditated, just like Jason and Tommy. But the method of killing was far more gruesome. The weapons used were also different.
I don't want to try to make connections in cases where there aren't any, nor do the police that are investigating them, which is perhaps why they're being so careful with what they say. At first blush, it would appear that Crystal was maybe the victim of a domestic dispute gone wrong and someone just very carefully disposed of her body. Another theory, did she just get up and walk away from her life? Yes, kids are stressful, but most mothers don't just walk away from five kids, and by all accounts, especially not her. Brooks seemed very unconcerned with her disappearance, and he also doesn't seem to be cooperating with questioning or search efforts, and he is still considered a suspect by police. He has never been ruled out. And many people in Bardstown, this is a whole other theory, this is where it kind of makes a sharp turn. Many people in Bardstown, including Tommy, Crystal's dad, believe that a drug cartel may have been involved in these murders and disappearances. At the time, Kentucky had a massive opioid overdose problem. There were 22 overdoses a day in Jefferson County alone, and that's the county that Louisville is a part of. And this may sound far-fetched, but I can tell you that the opioid epidemic hit Kentucky hard. You would be very hard-pressed to find a person here that hasn't been affected by addiction, either personally or through someone they know, me included. Not personally, but someone I know. The theory here, I think that actually makes a good bit of sense. Just hear me out while I unravel my red string. Jason was a narcotics officer with a narcotics canine that led to many drug arrests. Sherry believes that Crystal may have stumbled across something drug-related that got her killed. In the book, The Cornbread Mafia by James Higdon, the author says that there was actually a Mexican drug cartel presence in Kentucky involved in the sale of marijuana and opioids at the time. So really, small town USA is involved in a Mexican drug ring. Why would that be? Why would Mexican cartel have any interest in, you know, small town Kentucky? Well, Bardstown geographically has very easy access to different parts of the country, which obviously is good for trafficking drugs. Easy access to roads. It's a lot harder to fly drugs, I would assume, than to drive them. Also, this is terrible. I didn't know this. The solve rate for murders at the time was 45% in Kentucky. And James, the author of Cornbread Mafia, said that if you want to kill somebody in Kentucky, you have about a 50-50 shot of getting away with it. Again, pretty terrifying. I live here. I would rather not be a statistic. Also, there was evidence in Tommy's box that corroborated the drug angle. Tommy received a letter from an inmate claiming that Crystal and Jason, their disappearances and death were connected. The inmate had information regarding the murders of the Netherlands that was never released to the public. And this is from the Oxygen documentary. That's how this was seen. It was in Tommy's box, and Sherry showed it to the hosts, Stephanie and Dwayne, of the Oxygen documentary. This inmate also claimed that he knows who planned Jason Ellis's killing, he knows who did it, and that they planned that killing in his basement. This same inmate also said that Crystal's car was planted on the Bluegrass Parkway after she was killed and her body dismembered and burned by hitmen. So I don't think he was saying that the Hawks did it, but I think he was insinuating that they hired someone to kill her. That anonymous inmate spoke with Stephanie and Dwayne, the makers of the Oxygen series. He said that he had attempted to give this information to police several times and that he was incarcerated in an attempt to keep him quiet. Who knows if any of this is true, but this inmate did have knowledge of the crimes that were not released to the public. Tommy made comments to Sherry and others before his death that he had uncovered something that was much bigger than Kentucky. He was killed before he could ever tell anyone what he found. And neither Sherry nor anyone that knew Crystal believes that she was involved with drugs and that if she is gone due to something drug related, it's because she saw something she wasn't supposed to. Again, these theories are all speculation. Obviously, there isn't any supporting evidence. It's hearsay. It's testimony from an inmate. But to add to that inmate's credibility, he actually did not ask for any kind of a reduced sentence or any perks or incentives whatsoever. He just gave the information willingly, and he did provide it to law enforcement after he spoke with the documentary makers. So what's been done recently? there have actually been developments, I mean, very recently, like in the last month with this case, and I thought it was going to crack wide open. On March 21st, 2018, the Kentucky House of Representatives and the State Senate passed a resolution honoring the murdered and missing people of Bardstown, including Crystal and Tommy Ballard, and they urge anyone with information on the crimes to come forward. On June 27th, 2018, Brooks again denies having any connection to Crystal's disappearance with WDRB, saying, "I don't have anything to say. I really don't have anything to say. I really don't have anything to say because I don't know anything, so I really don't have anything to say." Man, he really did not have anything to say. He said jack shit there. Way to exonerate yourself, buddy. Like, he doesn't even seem like he gives a shit to me, but maybe that's just my impression. Let's talk about, will Crystal ever get justice? Again, more developments in the case. The Nelson County Sheriff's Office found possible human remains near where Crystal was last seen on July 23rd, 2020. And it was near the border of Nelson and Washington counties. On the 24th of July, the sheriff's office asked to be assisted by the FBI evidence response team because this evidence and possible remains were in a very hard to reach location. Those remains were then taken to the FBI lab in Quantico to be tested. It isn't clear who found them or how. And remember that 5 years ago, detectives found bodily fluids in the trunk of the car owned by Brooks or Nick Houck. And apparently it wasn't a bluff and they really did find that evidence in his trunk. Unfortunately, these remains were not Crystal's remains, but Nick still could not explain how the bodily fluids, and they said it tested positive for blood mainly. He could not explain how they were there. On August 6, 2020, the FBI, Louisville, and other state agencies took over the cold case. This is where I thought this was like going to crack wide open. Somebody's going to jail. Charges are going to be made. The FBI takes over and they execute 9 search warrants and conduct more than 50 interviews in Bardstown. The U.S. Attorney Russell Coleman said, "I have committed publicly and privately that delivering long-sought justice in Nelson County is the highest priority case of the U.S. Attorney's Office." In August of 2021, so again, very recently, I'm recording this the very beginning of October, the FBI said that it was conducting new searches for evidence, and it was reported that 15 of the 290 homes in Woodlaw Springs subdivision built by Houck Rentals, which is Crystal's ex, could be searched by the FBI, and that's according to the Lexington Herald Leader. Properties that Houck's family owns have also been searched in the past, but again, it was never divulged what, if anything, was found. The FBI had this to say, the FBI is working on this investigation for a while, or has been working on this investigation for a while, and our hope is we bring a fresh perspective to the case. More importantly, we also bring a significant amount of resources to this investigation. And this is what an FBI spokesperson told Tim Beam on Oxygen.com. Additionally, the FBI launched a website, the Crystal Rogers Task Force. It's dedicated to Rogers' case, and it will share developing information, photos, and maps of the community. And that's according to an FBI press release. Houck still has not been charged in the case, nor has anyone else, and the feds confirmed this. I moved away from Louisville near the time of Crystal's disappearance and moved back in July of 2021. Imagine my surprise after years of no news involving her that they start digging up the Brooks family or Brooks's family property. And I'm just like, they're going to nail him. And the nailing has not started. No information has been given to the public. So, I mean, what do we think here? The case just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. First of all, I realize that every town has unsolved murders and crimes, but the brutal murder of a mother and daughter, the assassination of a police officer, and a very similar assassination of a father looking for justice for his daughter just seems strange, for lack of a better word. I can't speak to what kind of investigation was conducted by local authorities, but it would seem that Crystal's father really led the investigation in search for his daughter. Just not really understanding how after 6 years, no one seems to be any closer to finding out what happened to Crystal or solving the other murders in the town. It seems like there are several different suspects.
be it individuals or groups of people, but there just isn't enough evidence to lock anyone down. Is it because the perpetrators are just that good at what they do and they left no evidence behind? Or could it be that someone with training on how crimes are investigated perpetrated them? Again, I don't know, and apparently neither does anyone else. But surely someone knows something. Hopefully the tips provided by the inmate were followed up on, and that after he contacted investigators, and perhaps, I don't know, the town is just too gripped in fear and they're afraid that they'll become the next target. Regardless, these victims deserve justice and they deserve to rest in peace. I'll do updates as they come to Crystal's case. I feel like at some point something's going to break open, especially with the FBI involvement and especially with the recent dig. I feel like they had to have found something. And if they didn't, I don't know, maybe somebody just committed the perfect crime. But in the show notes, I'll link the website where you can give information if you have any about Crystal's disappearance or any of the other crimes that appear or that occurred in Bardstown. And that's it for my first episode. Thanks for being part of it. And I hope you tune in again next week.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.